This podcast is presented by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Enjoy the presentation.
Agricultural research to improve food security in the developing world. An example of the University of California's own commitment to sustainability. But first, UC San Diego's dynamic new Dean of Biological Sciences and the importance of biology to our collective future, all on this edition of On Beyond.
San Diego's world-renowned biotechnology industry was spawned by UC San Diego, and it continues to grow, supplied by new ideas and fresh talent from the university's Division of Biological Sciences. Dean Steve Kay talks about the future of biology and what it means for San Diego and the rest of the world.
San Diego has been very fortunate. During times when certain sectors of the economy were on a downswing, to have an explosion in life sciences research, in the biopharma community that we see. Many people probably don't realize that here on Torrey Pines Mesa, within a 4-mile radius of our division at UCSD, 29,000 people participate in biomedical research every day. We essentially have a booming economy in biopharma, and our division and UC San Diego as a whole trains the workforce. We provide many discoveries that are used by that industry. Well over 200 companies have been founded on the Mesa that are a product of UC San Diego and its neighboring research institutions. This is a scientific economy that employs tens and tens of thousands of people here in San Diego and has essentially buffered San Diego from some of the economic hard times that other areas of the country which didn't have a life science industry were subject to. I've often been quoted as saying that biology will save the world. And what I really mean by that is biologists will save the world, and a knowledge of biology will save the world. Why? Because to me, biology is the study of all living things on the planet. And so understanding biology helps us understand who we are, how we can be more healthy, how we can interact with other living things in our environment, and it enables us to essentially be better global citizens. Members of our San Diego community should really understand who we are in the Division of Biological Sciences. What is our work here? How will it impact their daily lives? A lot of people probably look at this tower that we live in and think many of us are sort of leather-patched academics wearing our Birkenstocks and really isolated from society. That really couldn't be further from the truth. We are a vibrant center of science, an agent of change, because many scientists here in the division are very interested, for example, in understanding the land-sea interface. We'll be establishing a center here that will help us use science to direct policies that will better manage our local environment, for example. On the health side, we have researchers who, for example, are looking at new ways in which cells interact with the flu virus and how we might combat viral diseases such as the flu or hepatitis C. These health problems and environmental problems are very real for the residents of San Diego County, and our scientists here in the division are actively engaged in solving those problems. The reason that I say our division here of biological sciences at UCSD can be an agent of change for our society is because I believe that through research and education will impact three key areas. One is global health, making us more healthy on a global scale. Second is our environment, better stewardship for a cleaner environment. And the third are contributions from biologists that will help us build a stronger economy. In the case of health, we at the division, for example, have a great knowledge of our immune system, of how our bodies combat disease. What we want to do is harness that knowledge so that we can begin to apply it, for example, to some of the more ignored diseases that we see emerging in developing countries. We have plenty of scientists here who really understand how the brain works, looking at that brain-mind interface. And what is it that goes wrong when we see an elderly relative suffering from Alzheimer's? Biologists in our division are really coming up with new ideas about what is the disease process in Alzheimer's and how they might tackle that. In terms of the environment, we have biologists who care a great deal about ecosystems, about how we can measure what is in an ecosystem. And instead of managing our ecosystems from a species point of view, we can start to look at the whole ecosystem and come up with much better decisions about managing and stewarding our environment. In the case of the economy, I think what's very important is we're facing the fact that petroleum will one day run out. And even before it runs out, we face a risk to society, both from security and its expense. So many of our microbial and plant scientists are looking at new ways of making fuels that will provide a more secure and stronger economy. It's very interesting that ethanol would be so much in the press right now. It's either on a vote about whether we should ban it on our beaches, or what we're hearing is this strange phenomenon that ethanol is essentially being grown in the Midwest or somehow being produced from vast tracts of sugarcane in Brazil. So what is biofuel and why does it matter? And are we really going to be converting corn on the cob into something that we can pour into our car engines? Well, we really are facing a crisis, an impending crisis in our fuel security. And what scientists need to do is to look at two major issues. The scientific one, that we know we will run out of petroleum reserves. And the second is the expense and national security that's involved in acquiring petroleum resources. So what we can do is we can start to look inside of plants and inside of microbes, which are in fact biological factories for making chemicals of a huge variety. And what we need to do is unlock those factories and encourage those biological processes to produce new types of fuel molecules that will replace those that we pull out of the earth. What this will result in is lower carbon emissions, so a reduction and a management plan for greenhouse gases and global warming. But it will also supply a whole new economy, a whole new type of fuel that ultimately will replace petroleum and give us more security and a cleaner environment. There's a great deal of activity right now in the biofuels arena. We see investment from the biotechnology sector. People who normally have invested in pharmaceutical companies are now investing in small startup companies that have new technologies to create biofuels. We see large oil companies facing the facts that they're going to no longer have petroleum reserves, and we see governments facing the facts that they have to play an active role in environmental stewardship and really take big measures towards ameliorating global warming. Here in the Division of Biological Sciences at UC San Diego, we're very lucky to have excellent scientists who study plants and microbes and who know how to capture the internal factories of those plant and microbe cells and direct them towards making new fuel molecules. We have colleagues at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography who study algae, single-celled plants that can be harnessed potentially to turn sunlight into fuel products that you can actually put into the tank of your car. And just across the way in the campus, we have colleagues at the Jacobs School of Engineering who understand how to capture these biological processes and to scale them up so they can really be done on the large industrial scale that's going to be necessary to produce these new fuel molecules and help save our planet. I feel very strongly that biologists have a serious responsibility to help the public understand how biology impacts their lives. I grew up on a small island in the English Channel, and one of the reasons I became a biologist was my daily interaction with the ocean. And second, it was a little Frenchman that appeared on the TV, and his name was Jacques Cousteau, and he used to tell us to wave goodbye to his friends from the deep. And what that man did was to show the world what had happened in the Mediterranean Sea and actually get enough interest in the biology of that sea to ultimately get political action that caused the Mediterranean to be cleaned up. This is a great example of how unlocking the natural historian that is in all of us can have a very beneficial impact on society. One of the things we're doing this year in the division to help educate the public about biological sciences and its relevance to their lives is to run a series of lectures called Evolution Matters in partnership with the San Diego Natural History Museum. These lectures are designed to help the public understand the role of evolution, of course, in generating this beautiful array of species that we see on our planet, the biodiversity of this planet, but also to help the public understand that evolution has a role to play in every biological scientist's lives, whether they be a doctor creating cancer cures or someone who's managing environments and has to steward biodiversity. Evolution really has a role to play in a contemporary sense and is relevant to people's lives today. The reason I came to UC San Diego to be leader of the Division of Biological Sciences is because I see this incredibly bright future, and I really want people to understand how bright that future is. It's about harnessing our knowledge, channeling that knowledge to improve healthcare for our local community, healthcare for our aging population. It's about producing plans for our environment where we're going to have clean, safe beaches, clean, safe oceans for our children to swim in. We're going to be much better stewards of our environment because of what's happening here in the division, because of the science and the knowledge that we're generating. And ultimately, in the not too distant future, we won't even have to worry about gas prices anymore, because we're going to beat the pump using our knowledge of biological systems. And that's why I feel great when I go to bed every night, because I know the next morning on the horizon is the bright future of how biological sciences will really save the world.
Providing food security, one of the greatest challenges of our time, is a critical goal, especially in the developing world, where crop destruction by drought, disease, and pest infestation swiftly places millions of lives at risk of hunger. Scientists at the University of California, Riverside are helping to meet this challenge by focusing on cowpeas, a protein-rich legume crop of immense importance to Africa. The research, which is expected to significantly benefit resource-poor African farmers, is being made possible by a 3-year grant of nearly $1.7 million to UC Riverside from the Generation Challenge Program of the Consultative Group of International Agricultural Research. A team of researchers led by Jeff Ellers, Philip Roberts, and Timothy Close work in both field and labs studying the cowpea.
We're here at the University of California, Riverside, Coachella Valley Agricultural Research Station, about 80 miles due east of the Riverside campus. And this location provides an ideal site to do drought work on different crops, particularly cowpea. It allows us to plant late. This particular trial was planted in, August 10th. And you can see now we're in mid-November and it's still quite warm out here. It's probably 95 right now at 10 o'clock in the morning. The other thing about this site, which is very unique, which allows us to mimic what's happening in Africa, is the very poor soil. This is virtually a beach sand type soil. As you can see, very sandy and not a lot of water holding capacity. So it's quite easy to subject the different varieties to drought and see real effects.
One of the things we can do in field station environments like this, and we also do the same in Africa, is that we can grow out many different cowpea varieties or types and screen for those that do better under pathogen pressure. So we can pick out the ones that have resistance, and then we can use those as parents in a breeding program to transfer through traditional crossing, transfer resistance genes for those pathogens into the improved varieties.
So many times in Africa, the rainfall will during the season will start, and the farmers will plant at the beginning of these rains in the hope that the rainfall will continue and be good. Unfortunately, in many years, the rainfall stops for a long period of time before resuming again, and they'll suffer devastating losses to drought. So we're trying to select cowpeas that will grow through these drought periods and then still end up yielding well once the rain resumes again.
UCR is well positioned for this research project, having decades of experience with the cowpea both in Africa and California.
So over the years at UCR, we've developed a large collection of cowpea genetic resources, and these are cowpea varieties that have been collected from all parts of the world, mostly in Africa. Probably 70 to 80% are from Africa, and these are collected from villages to research stations to varieties that are sold commercially in markets and so on. And so this represents the diversity that exists in the cultivated crop species.
What we do in the lab is we use DNA samples to identify these genetic traits that we're interested in cowpea. And the DNA system is like a fingerprinting system, and we're looking for distinct fingerprints that are linked on the chromosomes of the cowpea plant.
We see a lot of potential for cowpeas in the United States in many different new as well as old applications. There's opportunities as a fresh snap bean product. We're developing all white types that can be used in value-added foods. They can be added in to nutritionally supplement many of our common foods such as mashed potatoes or breads, cookies and crackers. And the high protein content and the high fiber content, the high folic acid content, all will help supplement these staple foods that we all eat. So there's many different things that cowpea can be used for.
Just to give an example, in parts of Africa, actually in the northern parts of Senegal, and also there are statistics showing in from Somalia, that up to 90% of the crops is sometimes lost to the fungal pathogen. And in parts of India, the same thing has been reported as well. This is not part of Africa, but it's also a similar problem where up to 71% of the crop has been reported to be lost as a result of this particular fungus. So if we are able to find resistant genes, like I said before, resistant genes and also varieties that are tolerant to drought, we can easily, or at least we can make efforts to improve the yield potentials tenfold.
What happens at UC Riverside in the next few years will benefit whole new generations in Africa of scientists, farmers, and families.
Juice, power, energy. By any name, it's what makes UC Davis come alive every day. And every day, students, staff, and faculty are learning how this campus can reduce its contribution to global warming. Efficient energy use is essential to the mission of UC Davis, a campus committed to the stewardship of the environment. That means keeping a watchful eye on how today's decisions and actions impact tomorrow's generations.
From my perspective as a chancellor, we have to begin now. It's not like we haven't been doing anything, but we have to go into a higher gear.
In fact, the UC president has set system-wide sustainable goals to minimize the entire system's impact on the environment. Among those goals are developing an action plan for achieving what's called climate neutrality as soon as possible, while maintaining the overall mission of the university. That would mean working toward the university having a net zero impact on the Earth's climate. Each campus will strive to increase the percentage of low or zero emission vehicles by 50% by the year 2010. In addition, each campus is hoping to achieve zero waste by 2020, meaning everything will be recycled, giving relief to our own landfill. At UC Davis, our 5,300 acres makes us the largest campus in the system. We are home to nearly 1,200 buildings.
760 cars and trucks, and 52 buses. That makes the carbon footprint of this campus significant. Amy Fole of the campus's Environmental Health and Safety Unit converted the campus's energy consumption in 2005 to carbon dioxide emissions and found that this campus produced 228,893 metric tons of gas in 2005. That's the same amount of CO2 gas produced by driving 54,000 cars for a year.
The biggest contributor to our carbon footprint is the natural gas usage and electricity consumption.
The energy bill for campus is about $25 million per year, which about $15 million is for electricity and about $10 million for natural gas. If you include all of our auxiliaries that pay for their own services, we're up about $45 million for the total campus utilities program.
Just by updating mechanical systems, the campus will save $1.5 million a year in energy costs and reduce the carbon footprint by 4%. New campus facilities are designed with five principles. They are sustainable sites, energy efficiency, water conservation, wise use of building materials, and indoor air quality. The Gladys Valley Hall included those elements, and as a result, it is the most energy-efficient building on campus. It uses 35% less energy than other buildings its size.
As part of our sustainable sites measures on this project, we used a native meadow grass to both reduce the water needed for irrigation as well as create a natural look here. And that does involve a change in aesthetics. Instead of people seeing a clipped lawn in some of the buildings around campus, you actually see more of a natural meadow effect. Also, the rainwater that collects on the roof runs down through these pipes into this rock-lined channel, and that actually seeps into the ground and recharges the groundwater instead of overflowing and going directly into the stormwater system.
The UC Davis R4 recycling program just received a statewide award for best practices for the work on effectively reducing waste on this campus. Lynn King, the project manager, says in order for the campus to meet the zero waste goal by 2020, it means more than just recycling.
There are a lot of industry vendors out there that we're working with to generate zero waste. So it's not just going to be what we can recycle, it's going to be what we buy. So that will be the strategic sourcing project, the environmental preference purchasing. That is also a huge key for this whole process to work.
55% of the campus is purchasing recycled copy paper, and the goal is to get that to 100% as soon as possible. 1,000 acres of this campus is intensively landscaped and maintained. That includes 9,000 trees, hundreds of acres of grass, and a 2-mile-long arboretum. 100% of the green waste goes back to the landscape in the form of fertilizer, mulch, and ground cover. In the summer months, the campus uses more than 1 million gallons of water a day for irrigation.
We're excited about the fact that we've got a new central system that makes watering so much more efficient.
A $1 million computer now controls all the systems by monitoring the water content of plants. The campus will save 700,000 gallons of water a week. That's enough to fill 25 to 35 swimming pools every day. All fertilizers used on campus are now 100% organic. And for every tree that dies on campus, two are planted. Trees capture thousands of pounds of carbon dioxide every year and replace it with oxygen. The key to sustainability is not just living the green life. Rather, it's about continuing research and teaching the next generation. In the classroom, design students are learning a concept called cradle-to-cradle principles.
That means that designing so that there is no waste in the future. That's really our ultimate goal, not to recycle, but to produce no waste.
Students representing all 10 UC campuses have been working with administrators to forge valuable new policies.
Our students have been the drivers in this issue, and we as administrators, as faculty, have stepped back, listened to their arguments, heard their passion, felt their passion, and said there are some very good issues here that students are bringing to us. Let us step back and really think about them and talk with them about that.
Jonathan Woolley, a graduate student in mechanical engineering at UC Davis and a member of both the California Student Sustainability Coalition and the Campus Sustainability Advisory Committee, says thinking green isn't something that can be captured, boxed up, and delivered through policy or guidelines.
The university really relates to operations, and you can see that in the way that we've begun working with sustainability. So right now we've, you know, put through policies that focus on building practices and energy efficiency and acquiring greener energy, cleaner energy.
UC Sustainability Chief believes that the goals set by the university are achievable.
I have to be optimistic that we can achieve them because society depends upon it. We have to come up with solutions as a society, and the university is the innovator, or one of the innovators of society, to come up with new ideas. We have all this brain power on our campuses, so if we can't do it on our campuses, where else can we do it?
At this year's convocation address to the campus community, Chancellor Larry Vanderhoof said UC Davis is taking action now.
And we're committed to purchasing 20% of our electricity from renewable resources by the year 2010. And we're committed to sharply focusing the campus's carbon emissions as quickly as we can. We're going to focus on reducing those emissions. It's absolutely essential. And if any campus in this country can do it, we can. We have a long tradition of environmental research and leadership and sustainable practices, but it won't be easy. We certainly cannot succeed unless we do it together.
The transformation to a sustainable society will be challenging, but we need to remember that this is an investment, not an expense. After all, we live in critical times. Paul Fotenauer reporting in Davis.
You've been listening to a podcast from University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Thank you for listening.